there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back, listeners, to another Horror for the Holidays stocking stuffer. I'm Jeff Searcy.
In the midst of drinking my Mountain Dew Mango Rush, I'm Jay Logsdon.
Oh, I'm also going to do that.
All right. People who are confused, see last issue, see last episode. Jovial Jay and Jovial Jeff.
Ginormous Jeff. Okay, Jay, so we're talking about Sinners, right?
Yeah, fuck it. Let's talk about Sinners.
Let's talk about Sinners.
Real fast, did you see Drop?
Yes.
Okay, what'd you think about that?
Eh.
Yeah, it was all right.
We're going to talk about them both, I think.
Yeah.
But, Sinners gets a mm-hmm, and Drop gets a meh.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure if we were going full on Drop or if we were just gonna. I was like, I think Jeff saw Drop. Let me ask him about Drop real fast.
Actually, you know what? Let's talk about Drop first. We'll save Sinners for last.
Yeah, save the best for last.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was fine.
Interesting idea. Kind of middle of the road execution.
So the movie starts and spoilers. We see like the guy threatening the mom, like her ex-husband, well, or I guess her deceased husband, like threatening her.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to have some other payoff. I thought that was more related to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And it really, really wasn't, but it was made even worse by the fact that it kept flashing back to it. And I was like, oh, is the killer the dad? Is the guy in the ski mask that we've seen in all the trailers and seen everywhere? Is that the dad? No, it's not. It's
no.
Nope.
No. I saw on Rotten Tomatoes, one of the highlighted critic reviews was a Hitchcockian thriller of epic proportions. And I'm like, did we see the same movie? Because I was pretty sure it was like a middle of the road. I mean, I didn't like hate it or whatever, but it's like I wouldn't say that this is, I'm probably never going to watch it again.
No, I'm never watching this again. I thought we would get more. There were just so many things where I'm like, I thought we would get more of.
Yeah.
And then there were so many more things where like I thought we would get less of.
Yeah.
And then also like spent a large section like being like, I'm pretty sure I know who the person sending all the threatening text messages is, and like I think they did a couple chances where I kind of went, oh, maybe I'm second guessing myself.
Yeah,
but I was right.
Yeah. I mean, when you've seen as many horror movies as we have, it's pretty hard to lead us in the wrong direction. But this, I don't even think they really tried that hard with this one. It was just kind of, honestly, it felt like they took an interesting concept, like the whole, you know, oh, it has to be somebody dropping these things to your phone or whatever.
It can only be 50 yards away.
Yeah. And then it's like, yeah, but I mean, it doesn't really even matter because the movie turns out to not even care about that at all. There's so many things they could have done better, and it probably would have been a much more memorable movie. But, yeah, the way it was done is just kind of like a middle-of-the-road thing where you could be like, oh, yeah, Drop exists, and maybe someday someone will make a better version of it.
Maybe M. Night is on the phone to his lawyers and being like, they stole my gimmick!
Oh, probably.
and did it better than I've done most of the movies in the last, like, 20 years.
Well, his agent's probably like, well, that's not really their fault.
I think what I wanted more was like at the end of it, I was just like, I wanted more of the sister-in-law or the sister or whatever.
Yeah,
I thought she and the little kid were great. And I'm like, why do we only get like 10 minutes of them? Give me more of those people.
The only thing that was an interesting thing about this movie was So I'm a Smosh guy. I watch Smosh. You know what that is?
I think so.
It started off with Ian and Anthony a long time ago as a classic like prank channel. They did like funny videos or whatever.
Okay.
And it slowly evolved into like a general comedy channel where they do all like improv and all kinds of different stuff. But Sam Lerner is married. He's the executive producer of this movie. He's married to Olivia Sway, who is a Smosh cast member. And this movie was inspired by them being on a date at a restaurant, and another Smosh cast member happened to be in the restaurant and wouldn't stop airdropping her Shrek memes through their entire supposed to be romantic date.
I love it.
And that's what inspired this concept.
I mean, that's brilliant. That's actually, that's a great story, and I wish that was more apparent for the actual movie.
Yeah.
Because that's fantastic. That might be the best thing I've heard all day.
I was going to say, that's pretty much the most interesting thing I found out about this.
But yeah, I think I already said my two favorite characters were the sister and the son. Do you have a favorite character?
The sister. All right. Yeah.
No real kills to speak about.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of light on that.
Because I was going to say, normally I think we try to highlight favorite character, favorite kill. I know we don't really stick to a format on Stocking Stuffers, but I think we've both kind of said, come downstairs Christmas morning, find this in your stocking. Are you going to be disappointed?
Disappointed? No, I don't. I wouldn't say I'd be disappointed.
I wouldn't be excited, but I just kind of be like, "Oh, thanks." Like,
yeah. Honestly, yeah, this is probably what like your grandma who's like, "Oh, Jay loves horror movies.
I heard about this new drop.
So get him the drop. I saw the Blu-ray thing at Walmart."
Yep.
And that's how you get this.
Yep. I completely agree.
You don't hate your grandma, but you know you don't love it either. but have you ever considered, Jay, that we could be completely wrong about Drop? 1 out of 10. My favorite part is where a window breaks and the entire restaurant depressurizes like an airplane cruising at 30,000 feet. Oh no, actually it's the part where they're watching her every move but notice that she didn't put the poison in the drink like she was told to. No, actually it's the fact that somehow they have cameras and bugging devices all over a restaurant without any of the staff or management seeing them being installed. No, wait, it's when they kill somebody and no one calls the police, you know, with a dead body lying there. There's just so many amazing parts of this film to sit through and endure.
You know what? Those are all kind of good points.
That's what I was thinking while I was reading this.
I mean, I still enjoyed the movie, but like, those were all very good points.
When you lay it out like that, it is kind of, yeah. And this is the second one I found. 1 out of 10. The trailer was more exciting than the actual movie. Just got out of an early screening of Drop. What an embarrassing, at times boring, and during the finale, hilarious watch. It got so bad it became an absolute embarrassment. It starts well, and even during the first time they get to the skyscraper restaurant, it was good. But after a while, it becomes tedious. The longer it went on, the more ridiculous it got. First of all, the date would have left when he realized Violet couldn't stay focused for more than 30 seconds.
Oh no, absolutely.
Secondly, do the writers think the audience is brain dead? We saw her pour the thing into his drink. Thirdly, that finale was an absolute embarrassment. It literally looked like a parody. Are there any positives? The ending app joke was pretty funny. Another thing I did like was the lighting cues, the graphics, and the sound cues during certain moments in the restaurant when she's being tasked to do certain things. Overall, an embarrassing waste of time.
I think that one's a little harsher.
Yeah. I was going to say, I kind of see where the other guy's coming from, pointing out the flaws. But yeah, that just seems like it's being cruel.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah. I don't know. Like yeah, I said, I think that second one was honestly a little cruel, but the first one, yeah, I agree.
The vast majority of the movie, the reviews on IMDb and stuff are pretty much in line with us, like 5, 6 out of 10. Nobody's saying it's terrible. It's not great either.
It was a very fun turn your brain off and just kind of watch movie.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not Sinners.
Yes. Sinners is the best horror movie that's come out this year. Probably the best in a few years, honestly.
It's up there. That's the thing. I said to you at one point, I was like, you know, we're supposed to get movies that you and I are both very excited for. The new Silent Night, Deadly Night remake, Final Destination Bloodlines,
M3GAN 2.0.
M3GAN 2.0. Thanksgiving 2 is supposed to come out this year.
Yes.
You know, we're supposed to be getting all these great movies this year, and like very, very excited. And boy, they're gonna have a lot of work to do to be as good as Sinners. Like that was when I left, I went, "Hoo boy, like the movies I'm more excited for than I was excited for Sinners have a lot of heavy lifting to live up to."
I almost didn't go see this because I was like, it looks interesting, but my wife probably doesn't want to go. And it's like, I'm going to have to figure out a time to go. But then you told me it was pretty good. I should check it out. My sister told me it was pretty good. You should check it out. And then my brother messaged me and he's like, "Hey, you want to go see Sinners tonight?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Why not? People are telling me it's good." And I'm glad I went because seeing this on the big screen was great, especially for a couple of the middle scenes. By the way, heavy spoilers.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love Ryan Coogler. Black Panther's probably my favorite Marvel movie. Top three, certainly. The first one. Mm-hmm. Partially because like it felt like whoever wrote it got what Black Panther's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that had it going for it. So like I've not seen the Creed movies, but like it's always been one of those things where it's like, I should probably see Creed. I like Ryan Coogler enough, like I should probably see Creed. Michael B. Jordan, kind of same deal. Like mm-hmm. I like Black Panther enough, I should probably see this. Ryan Coogler, Michael Blue Jordan, and Michael Red Jordan fucking knocked it out of the park in this movie.
Everybody knocked it out of the park. I mean, his estranged priestess wife is great.
She was awesome.
The rich lady that they're trying to hide her black heritage or whatever, she was great. Cornbread, I mean, my favorite character in the entire movie. Jeff's
star of the movie.
I mean, him trying to get back into the barn. Oh my God!
Yeah, just invite me in.
Let me on in. I can help you. You'll be coming in and out of here all night.
I loved it so much. Oh my God!
So good.
No, I loved how like subtle it was, like because like you know you can't you know when it first happens when the vampire gets after the Klansman and his wife, like that's great. But then when like they walk up and they need to be invited in and you're kind of like. Okay, like okay, they're vampires. They need to be invited in.
Yeah.
But then when Haley Steinfeld's character is like, "Aren't you gonna let me in?" Like,
yeah.
And of course, you know, you know, it being very nice and very, you know, because it's she's family, like you know, not thinking anything of it,
right? Because I mean, you wouldn't.
But then as soon as Cornbread's like, "Well, just let me in, and I'll help."
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does it, and he's thinking he's being subtle, but he's just the most unsubtle man in the world. It's almost, I imagine it's probably what I would be like if I had just been turned into a vampire. Like, yeah, come on, Jay. Invite me in.
We'll get this podcast started.
Yeah, let me help you out in there.
We just finished talking about Lake Alice, a movie that was slow and boring for, you know, the first 45 minutes of it, roughly, you know, compared to this, where I think you could say Sinners is very slow at the beginning. It's a lot of getting things set up.
It's getting you immersed in the world,
but it does it so much better. Yes.
You get so much more character development. You actually get to care about the people involved. I mean, you're seeing a picture of an era that a lot of people don't think a lot about. I mean, it's post World War One, but pre World War Two, that kind of Depression era, which was especially rough on poor communities like Mississippi. And it comes back later because I know I'm assuming you noticed the references to World War One between the brothers. The trench knife he carries with the brass knuckles, that was a common thing issued to soldiers in World War One.
Okay.
And they talk about fighting the Germans.
Yes.
And so they would have been a member of the Harlem Hellfighters, which was the all-black, it was the all-black unit because back then the army was also segregated, so black soldiers couldn't serve with white soldiers. But they were not only just one of the best units in the American army, but one of the best units overall. And obviously, at the time, because of the way things were at the time, they weren't awarded any American honors, but they got essentially the French equivalent of the Medal of Honor for their service in World War One. And so I thought that was a cool dynamic to put in there, and also kind of informs why they're so good at killing people.
Oh, man, it was, that's the thing, like, is it like the most horrific horror movie? Like,
no.
Is it the scariest vampire movie? No, far from it, but like... It does the horror and vampire stuff really, really well.
Yes.
And then when it needs to be an action movie, when you need that Ryan Coogler, you know, Michael B. Jordan fucking kicking ass and taking names like you got getting so many of the other movies. You get that too, and it seamlessly flows into that.
I mean, it has everything basically. And you know me, I love Lord of the Rings, and its magic system is entirely based on speaking and music, and this basically has the exact same magic system.
I loved that so much. I thought that was so cool. The like connecting with your ancestors through music,
like
thing.
Piercing the veil of time and seeing all those different. And I thought, oh my god, this number was great or whatever. Seeing that the literal barn burner, he burns the barn down around him.
So cool.
But then you also get the Irish folk dance with all of his vampiric thralls out there. That was also amazing.
Yep.
Also, shout out to the soundtrack, and the actor who plays the vampire, Jack O'Connell, has a great voice. He actually sings the song.
No, that was like everything about this movie was fucking phenomenal.
Having him be, and he's an ancient vampire because he says he remembers Ireland before Christianity, so that would make him at least like 1400 years old.
Oh no, I caught that as well. I was like, oh, he's old, like.
But it also sets up the perfect dynamic because you're dealing with two super oppressed groups in America, black people and the Irish. Both widely hated for a very long time. And I mean, the Irish also in their homeland also hated. But it's kind of like a dynamic that's reflected in the movie, which is why making the vampire Irish, I think, was so perfect. Because he's got a memory far enough back to remember the homeland that he's lost to the British and to Christianity and to everything that's happened to Ireland. While the... Basically, the black Africans in America have had the same thing happen to them, but they don't even have the ability to remember where they came from.
Right.
Because a lot of them have no idea where their origins in Africa were.
No, because they are Americans.
Yes,
at
that point, they've been in America for like 200 years. They've had no like contact with their homeland, so they don't remember what they've lost. And it also kind of, I think, comments on the fact that the Irish basically gave up their own culture to assimilate into the wider culture, and that's basically what he does, is basically assimilate everybody into his, because they all have his memories, and like when they're all singing in that Irish style together at the end. No, just having those two things opposed to each other, it's like, oh, so Ryan Coogler's working on multiple levels in this movie.
The one thing, and it's not a nitpick, it was more something that I thought like was set up and then like nothing was done with. I thought Cherokee, was that the Native American tribe?
Who would those be down there?
I feel like they said Cherokee, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
If they're in the Mississippi, Louisiana area, I think it would be the Choctaw.
But I thought, oh, there's going to be a thing where, like, they come back and help.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, maybe it's going to be, like, you know, and so I was sitting there and I'm like, okay, they didn't show up to help kill the vampires. Maybe they're going to show up to help Michael B. Jordan kill the KKK men that show up. Like, I thought, like, maybe he'd about to get, like, picked off at one point, and then, like, someone would shoot the guy off screen, and it'd be some of the Native Americans. Like, I thought that we were going to get something like that.
Yeah. No, well, the thing is, I think they might have come back if it hadn't all occurred over one night. Because when they see the sun setting, they're like, okay, we got to get home.
But I loved that scene where, like, when you first see the vampire, and he's running, and he's clearly, like, burning, and then, like, you know, they clearly knew that the vampire was in the hut, but I'm like, all right, well, if this old racist isn't going to fucking let us in to help, then we're not going to. All right, well, we'll head out. You guys can deal with it.
Yes, they were Choctaw.
But yeah, I thought I wanted a little more with that. That was the only thing where I was like, if they had done just a little bit more there, I think would have been like a perfect like 10 out of 10 for me. And it still is. It was just like the one thing where I was just kind of like, I would have liked that.
But yeah, I thought Remick's goal of using Sammy basically as a conduit to bring back the things he's lost, because he can pierce that veil of time or whatever and see things, I thought was a pretty cool motivation. More of an interesting motivation for a vampire than you usually see.
Yep. I loved the garlic scene. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, Jay, that means this movie's automatically terrible, because Ryan Coogler's talked about how much he's inspired by and loves John Carpenter, which we all know, thanks to the internet, is a hack.
Well, yeah, because that's clearly like right out of the thing. And yeah, but yeah, of course.
I saw a lot of people commenting. They're like, why, you know, why would he be dealing with the Choctaw in the first place or whatever? That doesn't even make any sense. And I'm like, it literally makes sense if you listen to what they say at the beginning. It's like, he's trying to find someone who could pierce the veil and bring his people he's lost back. It's like, they literally mention the Native Americans at the beginning having this, like, shaman that can do that.
Yep. Yeah, right. So
it's
like, yeah.
It's probably exactly what he was trying to do there, but they got to him too quickly.
But I loved just everything about the movie. I loved like the dynamic between the two Michael B. Jordans. I loved the dynamic then between those two, the two Michael B. Jordans, mm-hmm. and their young cousin.
Yes.
Oh
my God! And the ending, I thought that was great.
The ending. That's the thing I don't want to spoil. That was too.
I'm not going to say what it is now.
But that was great. But everything else, like, it's, oh my God, like. I loved the, like, the relationship between, like, I really, it felt like the relationship between all the characters. Like, it felt like a bunch of people who all know each other and, like,
yes.
bringing, you know, they go into town and they, you know, they grab certain people to come help with certain things. And I just loved the, like, the community building of this new place. And I just thought such a fun, well done, like, well shot. Well, yeah, like I said, 10 out of 10 movie.
No, I completely agree. I thought it did everything right. It did a fresh twist on, like, a genre that's been done to death. I honestly went into it. I knew they were going to be vampires just because everybody was talking about it. But I was like, this was pretty much as well done as it could have been. I honestly can't. The only thing I thought was maybe, like, a little out of place was the big action scene at the end. Because I was like, I felt like it could have ended after the night at the barn or whatever.
Right.
But I didn't hate it.
No.
I thought it was fine.
No, and when I loved the end, he's killed all the Klansmen. Mm. And, like, the fucking Boss Hog character is like,
yes.
Like, you know, he's sat there. He's bleeding out. And he just reaches out, like, and, you know, and Michael Blue Jordan is sitting there. And he sees his wife and his baby that died. Yep. He sees their ghosts. And he, like, reaches out to, like, hold his baby. And then he's like, you know, what are you doing? You know, he starts talking to him. And he just reaches over, grabs the gun, and just unloads into the dude. Fucking loved that. That yes. was great.
But have you ever considered that we're stupid, Jay?
Oh, I mean, my wife's already told me that there's a lot of people hating on the movie. And a lot of goalposts being moved mm-hmm. to make this movie not good or not successful.
It's none other than RogerEbert.com, Jay.
Oh, boy.
2 stars. Vampire movies often struggle to be inventive. The formulas and mythologies of the subgenre are tried and tested, repeated and reworded. Stinging holy water, foul garlic, burning sunrises, and wooden stakes to the heart are the primary tools wielded against the undead. Sometimes the biggest change from story to story is merely the setting. Whether it's a far-flung Eastern European country, an American urban locale, or a stifling desert. Knowing those limitations, I have to give Sinners a sweaty, gory Southern Gothic horror musical some credit. It's a messy picture that throws the kitchen sink at the genre and yet somehow often misses. Ryan Coogler's Sinner, Michael B. Jordan, plays Smoke and Stack, bootlegging brothers and former soldiers who left home long ago to fight in World War I before settling in Chicago to work for Capone's outfit. They're returning to the Mississippi Delta with rolls of cash and cases of Irish beer to open a juke joint in a disused sawmill bought off a racist white man, and they hope their little cousin Sammy will help them out. Despite their best plans, however, they're unable to create a safe space that'll protect attendees from the Jim Crow racism present in 1932. A bloodthirsty company will visit them before their lone day of business is out, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Sinners is a Coogler movie through and through, attempting much of what the writer-director tried to accomplish in Black Panther. The director reaches for epic scope when intimacy would do just fine, mourns broken black lineages, and makes bare the strains of American racism. It also returns Jordan to the fold in a dual performance that attempts to be smoldering and desirable, imposing and heroic. It's a shame to see Coogler's ambitious designs ultimately conform to genre conventions, causing the intended awe to happen only in flashes. The cast, a diverse assortment of major talents, takes a while to assemble, illustrates the film's broad scope. Centers briefly opens with a scarred and disheveled Sammy brandishing the severed neck of his guitar, arriving back at his father's church, desperately searching for salvation. The film is then told in a flashback of a full day of them hiring local talent and attempting to open their bar. It also introduces Paralene, a local girl whom Sammy is smitten with. The accumulation of characters and backstories takes long enough that we don't arrive at the juke joint until about an hour into the film, which, as we said, worked perfectly, but whatever. Coogler intentionally takes his time because he wants to narratively and visually immerse you in the world. He often leans on elaborate character studies extended by whip pans to take viewers, for instance, from Bo Chow's shop on one side of the street to Grace Chow located on the other. He holds shots and allows you to make your eyes travel across smoke and stacks for splendid suits, or catch the sweat that rolls off under the southern sun. Why set a film in the south at the endless cotton fields, bent trees, and even the life teeming around all these characters will be held at a visual distance? The same could be said for the high contrast and deep shadows of Coogler's compositions, which fit the horror film's tone but shroud the actors' faces. Even in his most emotionally heightened scenes, even some of the cuts appear choppy and off schedule. The film's topics are equally disordered, varied, and inseparable from Coogler's career. Blah 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 blah. The film's final freakout is a delicious, gory affair instigated by Sammy's otherworldly music. Drawn by Sammy's uncommon abilities, three white vampires singing Irish folk songs saunter up to the juke joint where they ask for entry. Though initially rebuffed and without spoiling too much, their ultimate way in feels like Coogler's warning against the dangers of whiteness and spaces built for people of color. I don't know about that, but okay. The consequences of crossing color lines is made clear. Where composer Ludwig Göransson, I love how people ignore that too. They talk about how Ryan Coogler only works with people within his own racial group or whatever, and it's like literally the composer he uses on all of his movies is like the whitest man you've ever seen. Which he did a phenomenal job in this movie.
Oh no, the music soundtrack's great. Probably a thing I will look to buy.
Oh, I'm definitely buying it. Even just for the two main musical numbers would be worth it.
Yep.
That version of Rocky Road to Dublin is amazing.
Yep.
Let's see. This collision of Queen of the Damned and From Dusk Till Dawn.
I mean, I will say that From Dusk Till Dawn, absolutely.
Offers plenty of spectacle, even if it offers few new wrinkles to the vampire mythology. It's like, it's about as an original of a take on a vampire story as you could get.
Yeah, like the hive mind kind of thing was the one thing where I'm like, that's new, but like, yeah, you don't really get like the shared like memory, almost like a mind flayer style vampire.
Well, and it's like he's a more ancient vampire than you usually are dealing with. He's got an interesting origin for a vampire. He's not like, you know, Dracula from Eastern Europe with the standard backstory. And he has an actual concrete goal he's trying to achieve, not just, you know, live.
Yep.
Which is usually what vampires are trying to do. The final three scenes, including a mid and post credit scene, play more like box checking than anything important. He also needs a big final scene where Jordan gets to go Rambo. Let's see. Coogler has earned the right for such big statements and swings, even if he does tend to miss more often than he hits. As the conclusion, by Robert Daniels, associate editor at RogerEbert.com.
Robert Daniels, you're the first person I think I've ever heard of that's not like some culture warrior on YouTube who's, you know, like I said, moving the goalposts constantly, who like seems to legitimately hate Michael B. Jordan movies.
Everybody in the comments is basically ripping this apart.
No, because a lot of what I've seen is like, you know, like I said, like, you know, YouTube critics, like, we don't need to say who they are. Actually, it has a secret budget. It's actually not made money. I keep seeing that. Mm-hmm. That like, oh no, what they reported the budget at, it actually cost way more than that. So this hasn't actually made any money.
Okay. So even if you take, because I know this was a bigger budget movie.
Right.
I think it was around $90 million or something they said. So even if you take that and you add the advertising budget to it, which most people say you could about double it. Let's say it's $180 million. It's made way more than that at this point. I think the last time I checked it, it was like over 250 million. So it's a smash hit by like any metric.
But yeah, I've just seen, you know, trying to discredit it without being like, you know, the movie's full of black people, so I don't like it. Like, so they're trying to find other way. Oh, it hasn't actually made money yet. Yes, it has. Shut the fuck up.
It's made, even if you take double the 90 million or whatever, it's made more than its money back just in the United States. I'm not even counting internationally.
And there's no, I'm sorry, in this day and age with like the way
they advertising
is, there's no way they spent 90 million on advertising.
Well, and you got to remember too, they're taking Hollywood accounting into effect. So the budget of $90 million was not spent on making this movie. It was spent on, you know, all the things that go with it in Hollywood.
Right.
But that's beside the point. It's more, even if you take the double the budget rule or whatever that they use for blockbusters, which I don't think anybody was anticipating this being a blockbuster.
I think people can literally go back to the stocking stuffer where you first mentioned this movie and went, Sinners, are you interested in that? I'm like, I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. And you went, oh, it's a Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan vampire movie. And I went, well, fuck, I'm in. Yep. And that was the first I'd ever heard of it. Mm-hmm. Like,
no, it's, I don't, people just always have to find some way. Anytime anything is successful, they're like, well, but really, because it doesn't fit my narrative of the movie industry, it's actually not.
So yeah, your favorite character was Cornbread.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite, oh man, that's the thing, I liked a lot of characters. Probably the blue Michael B. Jordan, which I think that was Smoke.
Yeah.
No,
I loved, honestly, if I had to pick an actual favorite character, I would say it would either be Sammy or Remick. I like them both. I like how they both have their own motivations. He wants to escape his stifling life as a preacher's son. I mean, his nickname is literally Preacher Boy.
Yep. But every character in the movie is great. Like it's hard to pick a favorite character because everyone is so fucking good.
If we're picking character, I smile every time I see him on screen, then it's Cornbread.
Favorite kill.
Ooh.
Because there's some good ones.
There are some really good ones. Honestly, it's probably one that a lot of people would pick, but the sex kill, that would be Stack, right?
I think.
So when he's like...
Michael Red Jordan.
Yes. They think that Sammy pushes open the door because he's been told to go get him, and he thinks that they're having sex, but he's actually being fed on by his love interest turned vampire. And so he closes the door again, and then when they come back in, because he busts in there because his brother's like, you know, what the fuck's going on? I need you out here.
Right.
And when she turns around and her face is just completely drenched and she's like, it's not what it looks like.
Oh, no, she plays that so well.
And his throat is like completely ripped out. You can see it's all gone. And it's like that was a really well done one.
I don't know. It's not necessarily, I mean, it is a kill. But the guy who like when Cornbread like walks up and his because he got shot right and his jaw's all like falling off and he just walks up and like, you know, and like nothing's wrong and walks up to the guy and just starts feasting on him. I fucking loved that scene.
I liked how when they eat enough blood too, they start to regenerate. I thought that was pretty cool.
And then the Chos, was that the
I loved the
like the wife impaling the husband and they're both like on fire. I thought that was a great kill too.
Oh, that when he, that's almost as entertaining as when Cornbread comes up, when he comes up later and he's like, you know, I started the car, honey, you know, just come on out here, it'll be fine. And you could see he's got blood over his shoulder or whatever, and he's just acting like it's all normal. And oh, her face, I loved her reaction when Remick speaks Chinese to her because he's absorbed Henry's memories.
Yep. Oh, so good. But yeah, this movie's in your stocking on Christmas Day.
I was super stoked. I'd
put it in right there. Yeah. Like,
I'm pre-ordering this. I'm definitely getting it.
Oh, same here.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So fucking good.
We might have to do this for a spooktacular episode.
Yeah, I think we could probably, or maybe Fat Boy Summer.
Oh, that's true. Fat Boy Summer is coming up.
Yeah, we might have to do it for Fat Boy Summer. Frogman, Sinners. All right. Well, anyway, get in touch with, send us an email, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com. Send us an email. Get in touch with us on social media. We are all the places. We are at Horror for Holidays. That's horror, the number four holidays. Horror for Holidays.
Indeed. Check us out. YouTube.com/horror for the holidays. Thumbs up, subscribe, leave us comments, tell us how dumb we are. If you're one of those like three people out there who hate Sinners, let us know why.
Yeah, tell us it's bad, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, actual reasons why it's bad and not like your meta-analysis of the director's work or something like that.
And, you know, and if you really hate this podcast, go to your podcatcher choice, 5 stars, put in the title, 0 stars if I could.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know. Tear us to shreds.
Yeah, definitely. Destroy us in 5-star reviews.
Yep. And last but not least, tell a friend. Let someone you know who thinks... Let someone you know who you think would enjoy this podcast about this podcast.
I don't know if there's anyone out there like that, but maybe we'll find them.
Yeah, maybe there's a couple more weirdos out there in the universe that like holiday themed horror movies. They're just two fat guys talking about horror movies in general.
Yeah, who doesn't love two fat guys talking about things?
Exactly.
It's one of the biggest genres on the internet.
It's why podcasts exist. what are podcasts if not two fat guys saying things into microphones? Anyway, thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye. Hey listeners, Editor Jay here. Realized, got to the end of editing this episode, we didn't announce the movie for next week. Strap yourselves in. We're doing Krampus versus Bigfoot, which promises to be something else. So yeah, get excited for that.